Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, this is Monica Leal welcoming you to the LL Research radio program, In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. Today is Friday, July 13th, 2012, and it's going to be a lucky day, not an unlucky one. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Jim McCarty is Carla Ruckert's husband, the scribe for the Ra Contact, and president of LL Research. Please visit the LL Research websites, llresearch.org, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more, and bringforth.org, that's bring the number 4th.org, featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. I will be asking Carla and Jim questions that come from you. If you'd like to ask them a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294, or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Leal, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty of LL Research. Carla and Jim, hi. Are you with us?
We are.
We're here.
Okay.
Good to be here.
Yeah. How are you doing today?
I am doing just fine. I've had a relatively steady week, you know, with the dancing of bliss of the Creator not offering different distortions than usual. As Jim, how about you?
Well, it's been a kind of a quiet week for me, not so much grass to cut with the drought here. More time in my own yard, weeding the gardens.
I mean, it's not that we're not blissful, but there's not too much of note. How about you, Monica?
Well, you know, after the horrible drought we had last year, and I know a lot of places in the world are still experiencing that, I remember vowing to myself last year, I will never, ever, ever complain about rain again. And we had some rain today. I had to drive home in the rain, and I just remembered that. I thought, oh, thank you for this rain, even though I don't like driving in it. I had an interesting day, actually. A friend of mine was going through some emotional and physical detox. She had been severely abused and traumatized as a child repeatedly, and had done a lot to heal. She'd been through therapy, and she'd done a lot of major changes in her life. She's now in her 40s, I believe, and really done a lot of healing.
Had a lot not to think about.
Yeah. And anyway, she was going through some emotional detox that had been triggered by, you know, changing her lifestyle, and things were kind of coming out and coming to the surface, and she had kind of disassociated some the aspects of herself that had been traumatized. And so she was telling me all this, and you know, a little emotional, and telling me about how she kept seeing a part of herself as a child reaching out to her, but she was afraid. She kind of had this part of her kind of locked away. And I happen to know of some techniques for rebirthing and soul retrieval that I had learned for myself and my family, because we had gone through some, you know, abuse as a child, and so that's how I learned these techniques. So I helped her through that, and it was just beautiful. I felt higher beings there with us, angelic beings, and it was just a beautiful experience, and I just felt really blessed to be able to share that those techniques with her and help her through that. And this time she actually saw the little child aspect of herself, and I just held on to her and hugged her and just kept reassuring her, you can do this. Just she had done work to heal, to forgive the people who had harmed her, but she had never before integrated that part of herself that had been abused. So
yeah.
It was a technique of bringing that part into herself and actually merging with the child. And of course, you know, through a lot of tears and fear, you know, she did it. And afterwards, it was amazing. She turned to look at me and I was stunned. She looked at me with the eyes of a child. I mean, it's like I saw a different person looking out at me. And I said, I see her. She's in you now. So it was just really, really beautiful, beautiful day. So that was my day.
It sounds wonderful. I'm so glad that you were able to help her. And I've heard of the rebirthing, and I know it does so quite a few people in this weary world a lot of good, and in almost no time. It's amazing how quickly it goes, and it's quite effective, as Monica says. And it's not one of those that gets into your stuff in front of people. It's more of a single person and you know, teach, learn, and learn, teacher together, working together to help that person. But it's not you and a bunch of people sitting around listening to you talking about your deepest thoughts. It's a little different than that, and it's much more tidy and small for people like me who would rather not go through that stuff in public.
I think that
a lot of us are damaged and have in some way the need to objectify our child, the child that we were that was damaged, which somehow has lost respect because the people around us then were not loving us or were not able to express their love in a way that made sense to us. And so we became neurotic in that we felt we were unworthy. We just couldn't do it, and that comes in all forms, and mine never showed. I was, you know, first in my class. Nobody would ever expect that I would feel unworthy, but my home atmosphere made me feel totally unworthy. I was always told what I could do to make it better. I was never told that it was really neat that I'd done that. And, you know, really, it really gets you deep. I remember when I finally decided to accept my lower, you know, age as an individual, realizing I can fix this. I have the power to fix this. I'm not a victim. And my teacher bought me a Raggedy Ann doll and told me to objectify that as my child. And I just bathed it with love. I slept with it every night, and it went everywhere with me. And sometimes Jim was embarrassed, I'm sure. But the doll went to my restaurants and to my parties. You know, I wouldn't want to miss the doll to lose. I had that. That's my baby. I'd take the baby walking. You know, I mean, I did everything I could think of to love that child. And I think that I grew tremendously over about a 3-year period where I just kept it with me constantly. At some point, I realized, well, I've gotten this. I don't need the doll. You know, I don't need the objects anymore to remind me to be easy on myself, to love myself. But I did need it at that first point because I needed to express that I accepted myself. It's one thing to say, well, I understand how this happened, but it's another thing to forgive yourself for having it happen at all. And people will say, well, that's not logical. Of course it's not a victim's fault if a crime or travesty is perpetrated upon one. How can it be that person's fault? And all I can say is it feels like it's your fault. It happened to you. The results were negative. And the fact that you were, you know, completely helpless in that situation, it can't be emphasized enough. When you lose your power, you feel that loss of power deeply. And I think that we probably all carry a lame and limping child self into our maturity, and it needs some help. Pardon me, but I just think what you did was really important and really helpful, and I just expressing myself here. Jim, you got anything you want to say before we go on?
No, I think you're right. I think that everybody has had some kind of a trauma in the childhood that makes it a very helpful thing to do to reintegrate the wounded child back into the adult and now is wanting to be a whole person. it's something that most people don't have a chance to explore. And if you do explore it, I think it's always an area that bears gifts for you and helps you to become whole and balanced.
Jim, didn't you work with a technique when you were with TD Lingo in Colorado?
Yeah, we used dreams for dream analysis and actual memory to go back and to try to remember the traumatic programming that you might have received as a child. And then once you had remembered something, then we used essaying or journaling to write about it. The Latin word exago, to drive out, essay is from exago, to drive out the misunderstanding and to reach understanding. And then eventually to go through a neurodrama, if you could remember the specific situation in which you felt you were badly treated or couldn't stand up for yourself as a child, then you used the close friends that were there with you going through the same experiences to recreate the situation. And this time you would stand up for yourself and to close that gap that was seen to exist in the brain's neurons, so that the energy, the natural energy of the brain, could flow forward and you could receive the benefits and have a more holistic approach to your life through the brain functioning more naturally.
Apparently there's a lot of different techniques for healing the aspect that had been abused. And what's interesting, this in this particular case, the young lady had done a lot of those kind of things, and she thought she had healed considerably, and I'm sure she had. And there was something about, what's that?
Just a certain level.
Yeah, and there was something about what happened today, where she said she literally felt her heart open up. She said she had felt, you know, despite many layers of healing, like the layers of an onion, she still had felt very constricted in the heart. And when we did this, she said she literally felt her heart open up for the first time since I don't know when. And I was thinking, and I was going to ask you a question about this, because where I got this technique was from a book called Soul Retrieval, which is it's a shamanic technique, and I have training as a rebirther. Well, and I kind of did a combination of rebirthing and soul retrieval today. But in the book, the shamans say that a piece of the person, a piece of their spirit or their soul, is actually splintered off and exists in another, I don't know, another dimension, I guess, or locked in time. And that's their take on it. And something I saw very interesting when I was watching the Nassim Haramine lectures, he talked about he'd worked with people, and when he got them to go back in their memory and, you know, in their meditation, go back to that point in time, but actually visualize it in that time and space, because the earth was in a different place, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, whatever, we're traveling through space, that people, it really made a huge difference, and they were able to really connect with and integrate that little splintered part of themselves. And I was just wondering, how do you think this ties in with what we know from Ra about being mind, body, spirit complexes? Do you think that it literally is a little aspect, a little splinter of our soul, or that got splintered off? Or what do you?
Well, I think splintering is probably not the right way to think of it, because you think of a limb, say, from a tree, you know, and you pull on it and it doesn't break cleanly. It splinters off and it leaves toxic things that run up under your skin and make you have to use, you know, the tweezers to get rid of it. That's the imagery that I get from, you know, that that verb. But I think that we are capable of breaking off little facets of ourselves along crystalline lines, since we're all crystalline people. We are basically very like a crystal in our making. We're made up of every cell has the possibility of being crystallized, and we work towards crystallizing and balancing ourselves, so that we can carry the whole integrated self without weight. And of course, when things aren't completely integrated, there's weight, there's effort, there's difficulty. And for that, you know, kind of symptom of a person not yet wholly integrated or reintegrated with the self, then you find this kind of thing happening where people actually do. I mean, energy is broken off along with that electrical part of you that was interrupted. So it's not exactly like breaking off a piece of a solid object. Everything is in motion. Everything is whirling and moving at a cellular level. So what are you, quote, breaking off? You're not breaking off anything as much as you're isolating from yourself a piece of energy that you haven't been able to cope with. Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah. Ooh, I love it. I like that a lot better than splintering.
And we don't splinter, and we're not lost. You know, your energy is not lost. It goes into
okay.
a configuration, so you can always retrieve it, like you said, soul retrieval. You're just going back into that swirl, and is one of your where you press down on the belly button to help people remember things. I had a guy try to do that to me one time. It was so funny. He was so looking for a way to help L&L research. He was coming through. He was broke as a hobo, and what he loved was stuff like LL research and sacred geometry. It wasn't likely he was going to earn $1 million in the next year or so, but at any rate, he was desperate to give me something, and he had learned a method where you press down on the belly button, and then you find the pieces of yourself that have caused you pain, and you bring them back in, and you realize, no, your brother wasn't evil. He really loved you, that kind of thing. And we went through this and through this. He kept pounding on my belly button. I thought, gosh, I don't know, can I take this? So I endured it, and he finally gave up. He said, I don't think you need this. Well, surprise, you know, I didn't ask. I just didn't know how to say no. I've learned to say no, by the way. That was part of the teaching of that one. But, you know, to say no to somebody when he's so eager to help, you know, it's really hard.
That's funny. That reminds me of the time I went to a born-again Christian church, and, you know, where they lay hands on people and they would get slain in the spirit, they call it, and they would just fall over. And there was this long line of people, about, I don't know, 30 people, and one by one the pastor laid his hands on them, and then when he got to me, you know, one by one they were falling, they were just like fainting, and he got to me, I felt a jolt of energy from his hands, there was no question about it, he was definitely doing something, but I didn't faint, I just channeled it, I guess, and he kept saying, you're resisting, and I said, no, I'm not, I'm feeling it, it's great, thank you, and he wanted me to faint, and he finally got away. And they said, go take her over there and baptize her, because he thought I was resisting it, and he didn't comprehend that I really was not resisting. I was really getting some wonderful healing energy from it.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, this is great, but we have an opening riff to read, so I'm going to go to that. And this is from, let's see, I don't know what session this is from, but it's from Ra. Ra says, the first energy transfer is red ray. It is a random transfer having only to do with your reproductive system. Questioner, could you define sexual energy transfer and expand upon its meaning, please? I am Ra. Energy transfer implies the release of potential energies across, shall we say, a potentiated space. The sexual energy transfers occur due to the polarizations of two mind-body-spirit complexes, each of which have some potential difference one to the other. The nature of the transfer of energy or of the blockage of this energy is then a function of the interaction of these two potentials. In the cases where transfer takes place, you may liken this to a circuit being closed. You may also see this activity, as all experiential activities, as the creator experiencing itself.
Thanks, Monica. I thought this would be a good one to run over today, because one big question we all have is about sex. It's like, where do I put it amongst the panoply of experiences open to me? And a lot of the answer to that depends on who you were lucky enough to get as a partner, because a lot of partners are not capable of fundamentally carrying the higher energies. They haven't done enough work in that way. And the work is a certain kind of work. I mean, we've been talking about energy. We've been talking about how the energy flows, and in a sexual energy transfer, Ra is basically saying, well, the energy between two people is potentiated. Every energy transfer is different, but they all have in common the opening up of energies by closing the potentiated difference between the two sources of energy. We do put out tremendous amounts of energy all the time. We put out energy on gradated scales of energy. So we put out red ray energy, orange ray energy, yellow ray, green, blue, indigo, and violet, all the colors of the rainbow. And we go through those sections of our lives, starting with our first raw experiences of sex as a teenager, and our first coming up blunt against the world as a brand new adult. Most people leave home somewhere in the octave between 26 and 16, I guess. And the new experiences are powerful and just can bring you to your knees pretty easily. And one thing that you do open up and experience somewhere in there, or maybe even earlier for some, is the sexual energy. So let's talk about why I wanted to express this tonight. Because we all start out with a perfectly good random sexual energy. There's nothing positive or negative about it. When I read people that are read about people that are talking about Wicca and do not understand Wicca, and they say, well, Wicca, the magical art of Wicca, which is nature magic, they can say, well, that's very negative. Or they can say, well, that's extremely positive. Actually, the forces of nature are negative, neutral. They're not negative. They're not positive. They are. And, of course, the natural way in which we all live is love. We're made of love. We live in a universe made of love. And so the expression of nature to nature is that of love, balancing, endlessly balancing itself so that the most good energy can breathe through. Okay, well, we are perfectly good sexual animals, and it's just fine to let those sexual animals play and not to define anything more about it. I don't think most people do that, but if one's interest is limited to that, nobody can say they're not having a good time. I don't think you can ever say that sex is bad. It's just not so hot. So if you stay within the red ray, you're doing something that you go out to the local bar and you go home with somebody and that's it. Or you're in a married relationship or in a personal relationship where you don't bother with sex much, but when you do use it, whatever energy is there, you know, defines your red ray energy. So if you want to move further than the red ray, than the basic feeling of the groin, shall we say, then you need to start paying attention to yourself and to your partner, to yourself to see how you're vibrating, and to your partner to evaluate whether you want to be that close and intimate with another person. I think it needs to be a special person. There needs to be chemistry and mutual admiration there somewhere. It really does need to be balanced to some extent. But whether it's a balance or not, there's a balance that is inherent to that particular couple. And so they can work with that. But, you know, some people find it impossible to find a mate that will willingly work with them on this. So really what you need to do if you want ever to experience sexual magic in your life, and it's very sacred, sacred sexuality is very powerful, is to groom yourself for being able to do such a thing, to feel such a thing, and to look for a mate that is capable of being your mate in all ways, not just sex, not just fun, but through all the storms of life. And if you get one as lucky, if you're ever as lucky as I am, you'll be the luckiest person in the world. My husband is a wonderful partner for this. Anyway, if you have a good partner, and you're working to deepen your sexual energy transfer, the first thing you need to do is clarify you and your partner on an orange-ray basis. After you've cleared red-ray, you're seeking to go further. You're now seeking to sort of clean up the relationship, you know. Do you tend to turn some, make somebody feel small in interaction? Do you jibe at him? Do you nag him for something? You know, does he nag at you? Is there something that you cannot get him to stop? There are things that you evaluate as you're going deeper in a relationship and saying, yes, I can handle this. No, I can't handle that. And, you know, it takes time. This takes time. Okay, once you've cleared yellow ray and your the orange ray in your personal relationship, you then commence on yellow ray, which is where a lot of catalyst happens, because it's the catalyst of the birth family. It's the catalyst of the marriage family. It's the catalyst of work. It's the catalyst of being in a group that you have a legal contract with. That's marriage. That's, you know, your birth family and so forth. So now you've cleared up the fact that you're married. You know, you get married if you feel you need to, and all of that's balanced out. Finally, you can fall into the open heart. Finally, you can fall into that wonderful place where all of that earlier work just goes away into a haze of balanced energy that is surrounding the release of the most high energy that either one of you has to each other. So you're both tuning, like, through a long date. That's the way I have always felt that sex could be the best. Is if you look at the whole day, the whole time together, you know, sharing a movie, doesn't have to be going out, but just time together to talk and be with each other, sharing some popcorn, you know, having all those things, having a bite to eat, having a nice drink. All of these things just are comforting, and they soothe you down. And as you're relaxing and getting soothed down and you're enjoying your partner, you're moving through all of the bad things about yellow ray that have stopped you before. It doesn't matter that you're married. It doesn't matter that it's a commitment for life. You like the person you're with. Why not? Let's do it. So you get to that place where you can fall into the open heart, and that's a wonderful place. And then I think it's just strictly with the couple, whether they want to do the work of, you know, preparing themselves for time together so that when they do come together physically, it is totally pure and clear. The energy is clear between you. And then that sexual energy transfer can take place. Now, speaking as a woman, I can really feel the physical energy pop into my body as soon as we start into the, I guess you'd call the before time. And by the time that our experience has ended, I'm just floating. I'm out of here and on the power of that experience. And of course, I lack physical energy. So getting that from Jim is most incredible experience. And I honestly believe, with all my difficulties, it's kept me alive more than any other one thing. I count, you know, all the absent healing that people are doing for me and my own prayers and affirmations, but Jim is certainly a big part of the healing. Whether you get into Blu-ray, you need to get into Blu-ray if you're going to do this as a lifetime thing. You need to be able to talk without any judgment and with total love, so that you can criticize anything in a loving way, and it's not going to sting. It just takes knowing how to work through these things without hurting each other. And, you know, that's pretty advanced work, but it's what you need to do to keep the relationship whole. And really, it only takes a few minutes if you're both willing to work. So here you are, you know, you have an evening, and you shape it. You shape it like the crystal that you are. You come together closer and closer, and then you offer the ultimate to each other physically, and you offer that to the Creator, and the Creator offers that energy to you, and it's really a heavenly moment. And Jim and I always stop and say, thank you, Lord, you know, before we move on to anything else. So I encourage people to try to move through these steps, because I think it's very rewarding what you get in the end for it. Speaking as a 68, soon-to-be 69-year-old woman, I have a birthday this week. I think my analysis, you know, at least it bears the burnishing of many decades, because Jim and I have been together. This will be my 25th anniversary. Jim, you have anything to add to this as the maid of the infamous person who dares to talk about sex?
I was just underlining what you say about working out the catalyst between you and your mate. We've been together now. We've been married for 25 years, but we've been together for 32.
Yeah.
And it's taken a good deal of work to be able to reach a point where you don't have these grudges that you're holding or misunderstandings that continue. If you handle these things as they come up, usually people have a pattern between them that there's no more than a handful, five or six areas of potential misunderstanding that will pop up. And if you can talk openly and then talk from the heart and really reach a mutual resolution in these areas, then it seems like the sexual energy has the opportunity to flow more freely up to the next available chakra, as you were talking about, red through violet. And as it begins to move, then you notice that your sexual experience begins to increase. It improves. Fortunately, you know, that's one thing I think that over the years, as you get older, can get better. You know, the body seems to fall apart, but it doesn't seem to have any effect upon the sexual
energy
transfer and the ability to experience this transfer. And the key, though, is what you just said about talking about the difficulties, the misunderstandings that exist between you and your partner, and resolve those. And resolve them so that you both feel good about it. You feel like there really has been a resolution, and you're not just making a deal. You know, I'll bear a little bit of this in order to get that. Something that you really feel like you've reached a solution. You both agree upon it, and then you can go forward from it. That, I think, is the key to really having a great sexual energy exchange and a great sexual life. And being able, not just that, but, you know, the entire life experience is enhanced when you're able to talk openly and talk from the heart and to reach these kinds of resolutions.
Well, I'm very blessed to have been with my husband for going on 30 years, and I will absolutely validate what both of you just said, absolutely true. That's been my experience as well, that over the years, you know, we both came from abusive homes, and we had to deal with a lot of that baggage that we brought into the relationship. And it's funny, once we had a child, as our son was at certain ages, certain issues that we experienced at that particular age would get triggered. Like when he was six, it triggered my issues from when my sister left when I was six and she was my mother figure to me. You know, things like that that we had to clear, and we did a lot of this kind of, you know, rebirthing stuff. And sometimes just being there for each other and showing unconditional love helped each other go through all that. But as you're describing this process through the chakras, that is so true. That is exactly what happened to us. We just really went through step by step through that process just like that. And it definitely gets better. Definitely gets better when you get up to the higher chakras. But, you know, when I've done work with rebirthing clients, I see the same pattern over and over with so many women, especially that were sexually abused as children. I never experienced that, at least not in this lifetime, thankfully. But I see that same pattern with so many of them that had been molested or raped. And do you have any suggestions for people that have this trauma associated with the sexual energy? Because it seems like they've got an extra big hurdle to overcome just to get to the point where they can feel clean again. It's always the same thing. They tend to feel this shame and this uncleanness about themselves.
I think that any of many techniques will work. The technique I would suggest is very close to what you were saying earlier about going after your child self that has been hurt, and taking that child to your own arms and curing the child within, so that you no longer have that energy block. When, you know, wherever you think about sex, there's a block. Whenever you talk about anything related to sex, there's a block. And, you know, your energy is stopped from flowing properly. So, number one, you know, you need to guide yourself through things that you feel are working towards the ability to love and accept yourself. It's a lot of times, as I said earlier, if something of a molesting or a raping nature happens to a woman, there will be every effort made to make the woman feel as if it was her fault. And there's a persistent attitude, especially I think among men, who have never, you know, had the experiences of being the little one, one that can't fight back. And or supposedly can't fight back. I'm sure there are lots of techniques for that too. But at any rate, whatever the experiences are, it's as though you need to accept, you need to acknowledge the fact that you need to help yourself. If you say, "I'm fine," and then you defend, you'll be building a very stiff outer carapace, you know, like a skeleton outside the skin, made up of attitude, you know, that I'm fine, I'm perfectly okay, don't bother me, you know, and so that nobody else will ever hurt you like that. And that's not the way to go, because then it's very difficult to ever get into an experience with anybody, you know, that you could mate with, because you have pushed away that part of yourself you feel is ugly or unworthy or a victim, or however you want to frame it. And go hide under the piano, as one of the books I read said, that the three faces of Eve, I think it was, she'd always go hide under the piano when she was being punished. And they would tie her up under there, and she'd spend time under the piano. It was unfortunate. And so what did she do? Well, she went and she got some help. And therapy can't be stressed as being too helpful here, because most people that get over a trauma like this get over it with the help of therapy and or medication of some kind. So that's logical. That's a good thing to do. Find a therapist that thinks along the same line that you do about your mind and what's important and so forth, because you can have a great deal of trouble with a non-understanding therapist that just wants to take you apart and make you differently. You need somebody that sees virtue pretty much the same way you do. So, you know, you sort of shop around. Well, he's a Freudian. Well, he's a Jungian. You know, you'll like him because he works with dreams and stuff. And, you know, so you try to help yourself. And you try to help yourself with a doll or with, you know, some sort of thinking about yourself as objectified, and you're rocking your child self or something like that. I think that if you find the right person to be a comrade and a mate, that person can help you heal. By keeping things balanced, by refusing to treat sex as an unworthy thing, and by gradually, you know, moving sex out of the shame category and into the lights that the Creator gave us to share category. you know, we'd breathe the same air, and we sneeze from time to time, and occasionally our deepest drives suggest that we should make love. And the drive doesn't tell you how to do that. You have to figure out whether you want to make it an ugly act that has no higher meaning, or whether you want to express your love of the Creator in your lovemaking. And when you finally decide, yeah, you know, I'm going to hold back on this until I find somebody with whom I can honestly share the love of the Creator. You know, whatever that bias is that you have, find somebody that you can love and who can love you back. I mean, that's your best shot. A great companion can help. What is it Jim said? I mean, Ross said, Jim, about the two who together seek
shall far more surely, those who have like mind who together seek shall far more surely find.
Yeah, and I can certainly say that Jim has helped me. I mean, gosh, you know, I'm in a bed right now, recovering from an operation that happened over a year ago, but infection got into the wound that the surgeon had made to fix my lumbar spine, and then another one, and then another one. There were five infections altogether. And after that, I kept getting them again because he'd sew me up and then I'd start with another infection. He'd have to take the wound apart and scrape it. They call it a deep reading, and sew me up again. That happened 9 times. You know, it's just been a horrendous time, and I haven't been at my best. You can say that. But Jim is just the most stalwart person, and you know, he acts like it's perfectly normal that, you know, I am now in his room in a hospital bed and have been for like almost 2 years. But I don't know, Jim, you want to finish that one?
Well, you know, when you're together with somebody that you really love, whatever experience you're going through is, you know, just the weather you're going through. So the thing is to be together with somebody you really love, and then whatever you're doing is done with love. And
that's
the way it is.
Thank you. Jim's terseness can really wrap it up well.
Well, I think you both are an inspiration to everyone for exemplifying a healthy, harmonious, and spiritually focused, successful marriage. And I think that's a beautiful thing. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you for saying that. It's what we've realized is our job now, is to live the law of one. Before, a long time ago, before Don died, he told me that, oh gosh, this was back in about 1970-something. He told me that he asked me two things. He said, would I please make the material that we were collecting available to everybody in the world. We didn't have the computers then, and I'm going, I'll try. I'll really try. And then he said, would I, you know, head a spiritual community for him? And again, it was, I'll try. But at any rate, the first of it was to establish the information that was going to be given locally, obviously. I mean, globally. And so the Ra stuff happened. Then Don died. His part in it, I guess, was done. And sad as we are to say goodbye, he's been wonderful help to me on the other side, because every time I start tuning to be a channel, I see him and he comes and helps me. He helps me in one form of the Holy Spirit. And I'm just so grateful that he's here in that guise now and working on the other side. And occasionally, you know, I get letters from people that say that he has appeared to them. Usually, you know, they've been asking for help, and he just comes and he says this or gives an energy buzz, and they feel that they've really gotten a lot of help out of it. So, anyway, that was the beginning. That was the creating of the material to be shared. And then Don died, and my whole life changed completely because Don had been my life. And it was the only way he could live. He really needed me to follow what he did and help him, you know, at all times, like basically in the same room if possible. And so after he died, I had a whole new me to create. I had a whole day to create and a whole night. And I loved doing it, but it was a wonderful thing when I came upon the realization, oh, this is the second thing. This is the second thing I'm doing for Don, is to have spiritual community and live the Law of One. And so Jim and I will be living the Law of One every day and doing the best we can to share it with those who come our way and find it useful until the day we die. That's our goal. Just to keep the shop open and make sure that we're available and the material is available. It's not really about us at all, you see. We couldn't possibly, on the best day of our lives, create that material. That material was created by the energy of the three of us in a very careful, what's it called, Jim? What kind of energy that runs on the line? High something. I'm going blank. Anyway, yeah. Ross said that it took 200 years to find somebody that they could work with.
Yeah, I'm not sure the type of energy you're talking about, but Don said it was attuned trance telepathy was the medium through which the energy was transmitted.
Yeah, anyway, the material offers a lot of hints on how to live the Law of One. You know, all is one, be good to people, you know, follow your bliss and pay your bills, basically. You know, it's not an attitude that tells you to go and meditate in the wild. It's more of a one that tells you to follow your joy, follow that which is strictly yours and only yours, and not what's in a book or another book or, you know, whatever. Excuse me.
Okay, we have about 10 minutes left, and I've got several questions here, actually, and I was thinking there are several questions about the harvest, and I was thinking maybe we could do those next week when you can really go more in-depth on that. And in keeping with the topic that we've had on this show so far about sexual energy and sexual energy transfer, I was wondering if you could explain what is an adept and what is a magical personality and how does the sexual energy transfer, what does that have to do with sexual energy transfer?
Well, the term was first used, the term adept was first used by Don. And the reason that he used it is because both he and I had been studying Western ritual magic for probably 20 years on his part and for 10 years on mine. We'd read the Golden Dawn material, and the best of all that we read was the Buckley material, right? Is that his name?
W.E. Butler.
Yeah. W.E. Butler, yeah, Butler material. The myth, magic, myth and magic, and then there's another one called The Magician, The Magician, His Training and His Work. Those are wonderful, and they're both still in print, miraculously. But that kind of magic has its roots ankle deep in spirituality by following the way of the Christ. The images are those of the cross, and the earliest of the images, the Star of David, is the energies of male and female meeting. So that's used, that figure is used, as well as the pyramid is used. And there's a lot of things that tie in with what the Confederation entities have been talking about as far as philosophy goes. And so that was Don's way of asking if a person could get a magical personality going. You know, he was interested in that kind of magic and tying it in with the Law of One. So he used the word adept, and I think that sometimes words are very confusing. But the question in session 50 was, how does the ability to hold visual images in mind show the adept how to do polarization consciousness without external action? Now, he by saying polarization in consciousness, he's talking about praying or chanting or singing a hymn or whatever you do to bring your own energies up, bring your consciousness to a higher point, to vibrate at a higher point, more to vibrate with less distortion and more of the Creator, more love, without somebody doing it for you, without external action. And that's really the way that magic is conceived, and the way the Christian Church sees the Eucharist, the act of Holy Communion. It is the true magical ritual. The priest is changing the wafer and the grape juice or the wine into the body and blood of Lord Jesus Christ. This is the belief system, and this is what he's doing. He's bringing it down, all of the gestures, all of the prayers, and he's tuning the congregation to a higher level at the same time. And then, you know, that is changed. That precious material of the wafer and the sip of wine is changed. And if you are able to accept that, then what you're doing, you're drinking the body and the blood of Jesus Christ. You're drinking love. The most loving being gave himself for us, and he gives himself in such a way that it's meat and drink. And so when you realize finally that your meat and drink is in the world of energy and not in the world of 10,000 things, then you'll realize that your meat and drink is that which the Creator offers you, and not what you simply satisfy your hunger with on one particular thing. There's a much greater hunger, and that is for an awareness of the truth. And so we all, I think, are seeking that truth. So Don, in seeking the truth, had come upon this word, the adept. But it means the same thing as a magical entity, a person who has done something to express that he has dropped off the robes of his usual humanhood, and he has taken on the robes of magicianhood. And what we do instead of that is simply to do the gesture in the air of putting the robe on. We do a ritual called the banishing ritual of the lesser pentagram every morning, just to protect the energy of the house. So I guess we would call ourselves adepts in a way, because of course we're just such fools. I don't know if we should. But at any rate, we're very serious about this, and we've been doing that ritual together ever since Don was here. A long time. It's about, 25 years here, and then 5 years before that, probably.
Right.
So I guess about 30 years we've been doing that, and I think that it definitely has a lot of, you know, serious solidity to it. But you can see, you know, we as adepts aren't wearing the robes, and one very important thing to do at the end of a magical procedure, whatever you may feel, whenever you feel that you've opened up your magical personality, is to put it away, because you can't carry that 24/7. You need to put that away and let yourself play, let yourself be lighthearted and have fun and be foolish. And I do, of course, more than you're supposed to do with that. But anyway, there you go. Adept is a casual use. Well, it's the careful use of a word by a man who was interested in ritual magic. I'll answer it that way. So that, you know, he was knowing exactly what he was talking about, but people that haven't thought about that before can get kind of confused. You know what I mean? What do you think, Jim?
Well, I would speak just a moment about the magical personality. That was a term that Ra used interchangeably with the higher self. And during the sexual energy exchange, at the moment of orgasm, the entity who is the adept has an opportunity to experience just briefly the nature of the higher self. And the higher self, or magical personality, has for that brief moment a chance to experience the third density reality. So there's a blending of realities at that point. And the magical personality is the point at which the adept then realizes the goal, and the goal is union with the Creator, or with the higher self.
So is this what you mean by once the sexual energy transfer is taking place at the green ray level, you have a good foundation of love in the relationship, and then the higher chakras start opening up during the sexual act, and you actually feel those higher centers opening up. And I remember Ross saying that if just one partner had if they both were in green ray, then even one person, one of the partners, could open up the higher centers, and it would benefit both partners equally.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, so there's a helping hand there in the higher chakras that there isn't before you can open the heart.
So the higher centers opening really is that's what's happening, or that's what's allowing the higher self into the experience is... In
right.
other words, is that what that means?
The transfer begins at the green ray. Both entities, or at least one entity, needs to get to the green ray level before there is a possibility for a transfer of energy. Otherwise, energies are just experienced by each individual, and there isn't a doubling or an increasing of the effect. If both can get to the green ray level, then the experience is doubled for each, and there is a transfer. And at each level past that, the blue, indigo, and violet, the transfer is increased, and there is a greater and greater experience of joy and union with the Creator.
Okay, well, this has been a good topic here. I'm sure it's of interest to a lot of people. We are actually out of time, but before we go, I'm going to just read a couple of comments from one of our guests in the chat room. This is from Lana in Sweden. And
Lana, hey.
Yeah. Hey, Lana. Lana says, hi, Carla, Jim, and Monica. What an interesting show you are having tonight. I tried to call, but it didn't work. Just wanted to tell you that this is a very interesting show that you are having, and also to say hi.
Well,
yes.
She's such a gem. She really is. She came early last time to homecoming and helped to cook up a wonderful feast. We always have a nice feast to open. Everybody eats here. It's a nightmare, but it's a joy. But for the person trying to set it up, it's like, the most we can have is 35, and we've been running full the last few years. So 35 people in your kitchen. Just imagine from there how the logistics have worked. But we just put chairs around everywhere and outside and inside and have a beautiful place to do it. So that's the way we handle it. But thank you, Lana, for all your joys. Lana also runs the Facebook page for us. So she's one of our volunteers, as is Monica, as our Gemini. We don't get a penny. We just get a pat on the head.
and
our heads are getting flat.
And just before we get cut off here, I want to read her last comment. She says, I cry when I think about Don too sometimes, but what you are doing is beyond what I can express in words in regards to gratitude I feel towards you and what LL Research did and is still doing.
Mm-hmm.
So that is from Lana. Okay, we're going to wrap it up. Thank you, Carla and Jim. Thank you, Lana, for your comments. And to everyone who submitted questions, we will get to those questions next week. We just ran out of time because the topic was just so interesting. But we will definitely address the harvest next week. And that will be Friday at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern, July 20th. Check out llresearch.org and bringforth.org. Bring the number 4, th.org. And being that it's Friday the 13th, I'm going to close with a different song. And it's about how today is lucky, a lucky day.